Oops, I think we still have some folks signing in the back there, so. It's Wednesday, July 25th. How quickly summer's going. It's about 10 a.m., a little after, and I will call the regular scheduled meeting of the Washington State Liquor Control Board to order. And I will ask Samantha to call the roll.
Chair Foster?
I am here.
Member Perosa?
Present.
Member Muller?
Present.
And if you've had a chance to read the minutes, if there are there any additions or corrections, any either one of you?
Move approval of the board meeting minutes of July 18th, 2012 as submitted.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you very much. Karen, you are up, and we're going to see if we're going to adopt 103 for restaurants with cinemas.
That is correct.
Or cinemas with restaurants.
Good morning, Chair Foster, Board Members Perosa and Marr. And I am here today to ask board approval to file a 103 for a new rule allowing minors in restaurants with cinemas under certain conditions. This rulemaking came to the board via a petition for rulemaking from the licensees at Central Cinema in Seattle. They are a bona fide restaurant. They do not have theaters. They have dining areas and catering rooms and booths. And they show cinemas as entertainment for their patrons. Some of these activities include patron participation for like Phantom of the Opera and things like that. And they applied to upgrade their location from a beer wine restaurant to a spirits beer wine restaurant. And when they did that, they ran into some difficulties based on current rules that we had for cinemas with dinner venues, which is completely different because those are big movie plexes that have several theaters within one location, and they are by no means what you would call a restaurant, but we do allow them to have alcohol service with no minors. So board rulemaking group worked on this and came up with rules, adding this into the added activities chapter of our WACs in 314.03. If the board adopts the rules today, I'll file it with the code revisor and they'll become effective 31 days from today or August 25th.
Okay, thank you. Questions from the board?
No, I think we
need a motion.
I move that the board proceed with final rulemaking and adopt WAC 314.03-105.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Thank you. Thank you, Karen. And at this point, we'll move into a public hearing on rules to implement 1183. And this is something we had a hearing on several weeks ago, and we now are having our second hearing on this because we soon found that not everyone that was interested in this proposed rule change had a chance to testify or know a lot about it. We've received lots of written comments. Thank you for those. But now we would like to hear some oral arguments from both sides again. And Karen, you're going to give a little background on it, please.
I am. The main reason that we are holding this separate public hearing revolves around, around WAC 314.52.110. And that particular WAC has an exception that allows for sales below acquisition cost in an endeavor to meet the price of a competitor selling the same product in the same locality or trade area and in the ordinary channel of trade. The background on this current rule is that it was developed because we had uniform pricing. There was a very small exception created because everyone had to pay the same price for their alcohol. But in the case of a post-op, a large licensee may buy several pallets of the product where a small licensee across the street maybe didn't buy that much of it. When the post-op was over, the large store still had product left that they could sell at this low price.
We're talking just about wine at this point because it didn't...
Wine or beer.
Wine or beer, okay.
Yes. And the smaller store had to buy new product at the new price, which was no longer on post office, so their price was much higher. For that small set of exception, we allowed that small, like, small grocery store to sell at the same price as the competitor across the street, which could have been below their acquisition price. So that was kind of the background of why that rule was there. When the rulemaking group was going through the rules to determine what needed to be changed based on 1183, that was one of the rules that we felt needed to be repealed because we no longer have uniform pricing. Once these rules went out to our stakeholders, to be honest with you, that's the only one that we really got much comment on. And many of the, many licensees said they wanted us to leave it the way it was. And a lot of our other stakeholders didn't know about that because they weren't at the board meeting and heard that comment. They've since found out about it, and we've kind of been flooded with comments about, no, we don't want it to stay, we want it to be removed. We've had other comments saying, yes, you need to leave it. So it just made sense to have another public hearing to allow the board to hear more comments. So with that, if there are no questions, I will let the comments begin.
Chris Ruthen? Okay.
Sharon, just to clarify, the proposed rules that are before the board would remove that language as I look at it.
Yes.
So I just want to clarify that the exception that allowed for selling a low cost to meet a competitor's price in a market area in the proposed rules before you has been removed. Thank you.
And Samantha, are these out?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so what page, can you tell us what page we're talking about so people mm-hmm. can look at it? Okay, thank you.
It's section 3B.
Okay, what page are we on? Page 6?
It's the very last page of the packet.
One. Okay. Eric Lent with San Michele. Welcome, Eric.
Thank you for having me. Well, good morning, and again, thank you for giving us the opportunity to speak with you all today. My name is Eric Lennon, I'm the Associate General Counsel at St. Michele Wine Estates. And my remarks here today are on behalf of St. Michele and in support of the proposal to repeal Administrative Code Section 314.52.110.3b. It doesn't really roll off the tongue. that creates an exception for this below-cost pricing to meet the price of a competitor. St. Michele believes that repeal of this section is warranted in light of the fundamental change to wine sales and distribution that was occasioned by the passage of Initiative 1183. More specifically, we strongly supported the repeal because of the real and significant harm that would befall Washington wineries should this meet the competition exception remain on the books in light of 1183, as well as troubling consequences, I think, of marrying what is now easier access and availability of alcohol with cut rate pricing. Now this section, as Karen just mentioned, was enacted years ago under very different circumstances, a different regulatory regime, and a different marketplace than exists today. Producers and wholesalers had to have uniform pricing, to post and hold prices, and to keep price lists. Volume discounts and other pricing differentials were not allowed. Retailers had uniform acquisition costs. In addition, there were other rules, as Karen kind of spoke to, that prevented this exception from being used, except in really isolated cases that you had to only, you couldn't buy the product again for a while after you posted it off, things like that. So this meet the competition exception was really circumscribed in specific instances. But today, after 1183, there's no longer uniform pricing. There's no longer, retailers no longer have uniform acquisition costs. So the largest retailers can buy in bulk, they can centrally warehouse, and they can command lower prices. So what does that mean? It means that if you leave this exception in effect, it's no longer going to be a narrow one. It's going to be not going to be a narrow one that's only in these controlled circumstances. It's going to be used in many broader circumstances. It's going to be a loophole that's going to swallow the entire exception that the rule provides. And this would have consequences that were neither intended nor envisioned when the rule was adopted years and years ago. And it would cause substantial damage to the Washington wine industry, which is the nation's second largest. And kind of for perspective, there was a recent Wine Commission study that found that the Washington wine industry contributes over $8.6 billion a year to the state economy and over $14.9 billion a year to the U.S. economy. And keep in mind that the Washington wine industry achieved this sort of impact by establishing a reputation for high-quality wines at competitive, exceptional consumer value prices. Now, over the years, we've been able to open up new markets nationally and abroad because of that value pricing. It's made our wines commercially viable and competitive with those of other first-class wine regions around the world. And because of that quality-value combination, we're able to sell at reasonable price points, prices that are already low as relative to other first-class wine-producing regions of similar quality wines. But it still allows wineries to be profitable, to innovate, and to reinvest in the state in wine industry. Critical to continuing that success is maintaining our reputation for high-quality wines at value prices. That's our brand equity. And it's been earned over the years by consistently delivering value to the consumer. By continuing this meet the competition exception in light of 1183, the board would give retailers license to erode that brand equity that's been built over the years, literally overnight, through predatory and loss leader pricing. Larger retailers would use the exception to meet the prices of the very largest retailers. That would cause a ripple effect. Now, smaller retailers who, as in the comments you've received, have trouble maintaining that sort of deep discounting would then lower their prices to meet their closest competitors. And then the largest retailers are going to come back to the wineries and the other producers and say, you have to give us even better pricing. That's going to squeeze our already low margins. It's going to result in a cutthroat marketplace that not only fails to reflect sustainable and reasonable pricing for wine, it's going to unilaterally position Washington wine's price points. And we've seen this in other states where retailers advertise deeply discounted prices to get folks in the door. But when a retailer runs deeply discounted prices like that, that price becomes the price. It's just de facto, it happens. That's the new benchmark. And once it's lowered, you can't bring them back up. It's very, very difficult. Consumers get used to that. But it's incumbent on wineries to have the ability to raise prices, to meet their ever-increasing cost structures, and to reinvest in the wine industry so we can stay a first-class wine region. And this is a capital-intensive business. It's one where you need to make significant ongoing investments in vineyards and wineries, production facilities, as well as research and development to keep pace and to stay at the level that we've achieved to this point. Deep discounts in prices hurt large wineries, small wineries, middle-sized wineries alike. If this meet the competition exception is retained in light of 1183, it can and will be used by retailers as a weapon in their price wars and in other competitive battles. And in those wars, regardless which retailer prevails, the only casualty is going to be Washington wine and Washington wineries. Now, beyond harming the Washington wine industry, I think it's fair to say that state-sanctioned below-cost pricing for competitive reasons, when you couple that with the increased availability of liquor and alcohol more generally in light of 1183, it has some troubling societal and social consequences or implications. Suffice to say, absent repeal of this subsection as proposed by the committee, alcohol would be both far cheaper and far easier to get in the state. In conclusion, I'll just say that I'd urge you to hold fast to the mission that's sitting there behind you to contribute to the safety and financial stability of our communities by ensuring the responsible use, responsible sale, and preventing misuse of alcohol. Allowing this obsolete meet the competition exception to continue in the new, you know, regime after 1183 runs directly counter to that mission. It would impair the financial stability of wineries by cannibalizing their brand equity, and it would simultaneously endorse alcohol as a loss leader consumer product that's readily available. So only an end to that anachronistic exception squares with their mission. So that's all I had to say today. I really appreciate the chance to come speak to you.
Good. Chris, Ruth Ann, do you have questions? Thank you very much, Eric. Ann Anderson, Walter Dakin Wines.
I'm Ann Anderson, and my husband, Lloyd, and I own Walter Dakin Wines in Shelton, just about 30 minutes from here. And I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to speak regarding this repeal. And I want to congratulate Eric. I think he did a very good job. I certainly agree with every word he says. Other people are trying to set our pricing. And like I said, we're very small. We only make like 2,000 cases of wine a year. And we work really hard to sell it. We just engaged a new distributor, so things should be going better. Everybody I know in the industry did not support 1183. And now with this, if you continue this repeal, it'll just really pull the rug right out from underneath us. Like Marty Klug said, it'll be a race to the bottom with regard to financing. And I and my husband totally hope you support the repeal of the WAC. So thank you.
Thank you. I'm not sure that that person signed in or then signed in and crossed their name out.
Cindy?
Yeah.
I think it is.
Oh, it is. Did you cross your name out?
I because I didn't know if I wanted to testify, but I do want to, so I think I raised my hand. I was going to listen to the testimony.
Okay. You're next on the list.
That's because you just want to give us a piece of your mind, right?
Yeah.
I'll make my remarks short because I already testified, but I think there's some additional comments that I'd like to put in for the record. My name is Cindy Zender, and I'm here representing Total Wine and More. And Madam Chair and members of the board, thank you for the opportunity to again testify before you. I think all of us feel deeply the concern of the wine industry. We have all taken great pride in its growth and what it has meant to this state and enjoyed the fruits of it in many ways and think it is absolutely critical to maintain a strong and vibrant wine industry in the state as well as craft distilleries and breweries. It's something that makes it special for us as well as being an important economic contributor. And Total Wine and More is partnering with the wine industry in the state and showcasing, carrying at this point at least in their Bellevue store, the first store, 1,700 different Washington wines, which is, I don't think you'll find that in any other place. But that said, we think that the pressure on prices for wine in this state is a result of 1183, not the result of the use of this exception. And that pressure will continue, and I can understand why it causes great concern on the part of the wine industry. But in our view, the one of the strongest defenses that the wine industry has is a vibrant retail market with large and small stores able to survive and to be able to carry the higher priced product, let's say in a small boutique store or large volume in the large chains or the kind of variety that Total Wine presents. Because otherwise it will be a race to the bottom. It will be only the large volume sellers who have the ability to drive the kind of market prices that you're concerned about. And in order to be able to have that vibrant retail market, that strong retail market, you have got to be able to give people tools to combat the volume discounts that are driven by the larger retailers. And you know, certainly Total Wine & More is a large retailer, but it is an independent retailer. It does not have the volume of the Safeways or the Costco's. But it also recognizes the importance of having that mix of a retail market. And so that's why we want to see this exception in place, because it really will give the ability of the smaller and independent stores the chance to at least market a little bit, to say, come into my store, see what is available here, and to survive the kind of transition that happens, that we're going through with 1183. And we haven't seen any evidence of harm from this exception yet, and we really urge you to take time to examine what happens in post 1183. Unlike most of the rules that are before you to implement 1183, this is not required. You have the opportunity here to do that thoughtful look, to see what is happening in the market, and to be able to intervene in a strategic way that's really going to make a difference. And I urge you to take that time to see what's going to happen. There are many, many states where you don't need this exception because you can already sell at below acquisition cost. And I would use California as an example. Now, we've done some research to try to get some data and haven't gotten it, but anybody who has gone to wine country know that there's no shortage of wineries in California. Who are able to survive and market and grow, and I hope and I am sure, because of the quality and the skill of our local wineries in Washington State, that that same thing will happen in post 1183. So I don't think that there is evidence of imminent harm and danger that will come from this exception. There is no need to act right now. There is the opportunity to take a careful look. We need not only a robust wine industry and craft and distillery, but we also need a robust retail market. And I would, again, request the board that you take the time, that you not repeal this, let the market sell down, have the conversation that we would love to be part of about how can the board best implement its mission in this new 1183 world, so that we can hopefully come together, the wine industry, the retail industry, the producers. It would be wonderful if we could actually come together with a little bit more of a common vision about how we all survive and flourish in this new world. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Cindy. And now from the other side, Jane Leonard. Welcome, Jane.
Thank you. Madam Chair, board members, first of all, thank you very much for the opportunity to speak today. We really appreciate that, because we know that we've talked to a lot of wineries who are very concerned about this. As you all well know, as my friends in the audience know, the one place we really hate to be is at odds with our retailers. Our retailers are our customers. They're the entity, well, next to the consumer, that matters to us most. And so this is a difficult spot for the wineries to be in. What's happened recently, though, is not just the passage of 1183, which changes the whole marketplace for the wineries in Washington. And as you know, because you've heard me say this forever, we're special. The wineries in Washington have really developed this incredible niche market, unique market, and the retailers in the room and outside of the room continue our progress in this by selling our wines, and we want them to continue to do that in the greatest way possible. The problem that we have right now is that we still have just Washington State as the marketplace. So it's just the same residents here in our state who are buying wine and liquor from now the whole new system of stores. All of a sudden, in the last month, what is it, 6 weeks now since 1183 was enacted, there are large retailers coming into this marketplace who are going to need customers too. And the customers currently are going to some of the big box retailers who've been in town for a while, the local grocery stores who've been in town for a while, everybody who sells online. Now we've got new, huge competitive players in the market. They need those customers. And as I think has honestly been stated, they need to draw customers into their stores. what we're urging the board to do is not let the wineries bear the brunt of this price deflation. There is going to be, and it's already started, there are price wars going on now in some of the new retailers that are marking up wine at very, very little income and much lower than prices in the neighborhood. What we're asking for with the repeal of this regulation is to deal with the new reality that we're facing in this competitive environment, and especially the new influx of huge retailers who, thank goodness, are hopefully going to be promoting our wines. But in the price wars that are going to occur and that are already starting without removing the floor, the wineries will bear the brunt of the price deflation, and especially the smallest wineries, the largest and the smallest with us today, very representative of the wineries that we've been speaking to, are very concerned if this race to the bottom that I think Ann and Eric both mentioned. I'd like to just ask the board to deal with the new marketplace that 1183 has established by not taking the floor out. It's just the minimum floor. It's what the retailer paid for the wine. We think the wine should at least cost that much when they turn it around. It is something that happens with price deflation. It becomes, as Eric had mentioned, it becomes what the price is. If you sell to a retailer who does buy huge volume and does get the discount under the new laws, that shouldn't be the price of your product everywhere in every retail location in the state, which is what the race to the bottom does. I'd like to, if I may, quote just a winer who submitted a comment to you the last couple of days. She's got a very good quality winery in Seattle. She says, you know, retailers do have the upper hand in this current environment. The law has changed. The retailers now have the bargaining power in the cloud. In large part. Shelf space is limited, and there are plenty of wines out there. Small wineries do not start with a level playing field. After 1183, wineries are stuck. Don't bargain and don't get any shelf space. Do bargain with one retailer and incur the repercussions from other wine retailers. That's what not repealing this rule would do. It would really put a serious disadvantage on the wineries of Washington to be in the marketplace at a competitive price, and most important, to maintain the integrity of their brand. They've worked very hard to establish their brands. The wineries do not want others setting their price. Thank you very much for the opportunity to comment.
Mm-hmm. Gina, I have just a question. So I'm a winery. I sell to you, the distributor, for $22. Mm-hmm. And I'm still making a profit when I sell it to you for $22, mm-hmm. because it hasn't cost quite that much for me to produce.
Hopefully
it.
Hopefully not.
Yeah. And the distributor then sells it to the retailer. The distributor puts a markup on it. Mm-hmm. And so then the retailer sells it for $24, only with a $2 markup. Are you saying that's okay?
Under the current system, usually there's going to be a sale either direct to mm-hmm. the retailer or through a wholesaler to the retailer, and the retailer most of the time will add a profit because they need to
have
a profit in general to survive, and that's the common way that business is done now. We're already seeing some of the big retailers coming into town putting very little profit on, and if you're buying directly, you cut out the wholesale middle, so you can really sell. Right now in current practice, you can sell at very little over your purchase price. And that is happening, and that's part of what this new market is doing. What we're asking is right now the floor for sales should be, and hopefully will be, if you repeal this section, the price that the retailer paid for it. So the retailer, him or herself, cannot sell that bottle of wine for less than they paid for it.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we're asking you to do by repealing this section of the wine. To retain is to make sure that floor is in place.
So you're okay with acquisition cost?
Yeah, that's fine. I mean, it's not comfortable for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, right now already that's happening. Wine is already being in the new marketplace. There's wines out there that are selling for a dollar over the price that the retailer bought it for.
Mm-hmm.
That's not good for the brand. But at least it's a floor. If the floor is removed, then the price at which the largest retailer can buy something could become de facto the price for that product, which makes it almost impossible for the winery who has created that product, created the brand, priced the brand in a way that makes them competitive, makes it almost impossible for them to retain that price if the entire market can go to that lowest price. Really problematic, very, very upsetting, and as I started at the outset, it's a very difficult place for the wine industry to be in opposition to its retailer partners. We don't like it, but it's absolutely imperative, and they've asked us to come here and tell you that today.
Chris, Ruthann, comments? Thanks, Jane. Angie? Welcome, Dan.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the board. It's nice to be back with you again to comment on the exemption under the advertising by retail licensees. I have already done extensive comments. I have an additional thought that I wanted to share today that I also had sent an email yesterday. I do represent the IMJNG, and I represent the Washington Food Industry Association, who are the independent grocers of this state, and our position is in opposition of removal of Sub D. And we maintain that position, and we are very sympathetic with the position that the wineries are in, because we too are in the position that 1183 makes it very difficult for our stores to be competitive with the large new purchasers under price deregulation. But, and we've talked about a lot of things around the deletion of Sub D. I do want to add the comment that Sub D only allows our stores or any store to meet the lowest price in the immediate market area of a competitor. Those prices start with the wineries. They start with the wineries. We don't cause the differential of the pricing. The wineries and the spirit manufacturers cause it. And all we're asking for is the ability to be competitive, because we are the Washington state-based retailers. Our monies don't go out the door to Oakland or wherever. They stay right here. And we want to survive too in this environment. And so we're saying we just want to have the ability to meet the lowest price. And the lowest price has to be the acquisition cost of a retailer that receives the lowest price through the suppliers. So we're, if the wineries choose to provide discounted prices to different purchasers, that's their business decision. But what they're saying now is we want that privilege, but we don't want you, smaller retailers, to have the privilege of being competitive. And all we're saying is, that's what we need, and that's what we want. We would ask that you would retain this provision. And again, as I discussed before, until at least next summer, next June, when some of the barriers to the warehousing is removed and there's more options to warehouse through our grocery suppliers and stuff to do quantity discounts that are currently being provided to self-warehousing retailers. So that's what we're asking for, and I appreciate you listening once again to me, and thank you so much.
Thank you, Jan. Questions for that? Okay. Mary Munger?
I just have a question. Is this going to be about wine, or is it about spirits too?
Oh, it's about everything. Mm-hmm.
Thank you for for listening to me. I just wanted to bring up some concerns.
Mary, do you want to introduce yourself and tell us who you're from?
My name is Mary Munger. I'm the general manager for AS Liquor and S&S Petroleum.
So, pardon?
AS Liquor and S&S Petroleum.
Thank you.
I wanted to share, you know, customer concerns. Customers are already upset about the 17%. You know, we get that, you know, every day, and that's something that they didn't really understand when that the 17% was going to go into effect. And allowing grocery stores to sell at or below cost is going to drive the small businesses out. Distributors are working with the grocery stores, we believe, to create like a monopoly. And by having them again, you sell like below cost or at cost is again, you know, going to drive us out of business. State licenses were purchased based on some of the products that the state had really high sales on. And by taking away some of those products, again, like, and I'm talking about the miniatures, would be very harmful to our business. That's all I have.
Are you an owner of a new liquor store?
I'm the general manager.
Okay.
Uh-huh. The owner is out of state right now.
Mm-hmm.
So he wanted me to address these concerns. But yes, we bought licenses for four, and we have two running. And it's been really difficult. It's been really hard. Because the distributors, too, they change their cost. What their cost could be 1 week, you know, and then we have all our labels, we got it priced, and then the next week, they've changed again. And I actually talked to one of the distributors, and he asked me, he goes, oh, did your prices go up again? I go, well, did your cost go up? And he goes, yeah, probably, you never know. And so I just really believe, to be fair to the small business, that, you know, we need to take this into consideration. You know, we have priced, you know, the grocery stores, and we are being competitive, but obviously we're not able to buy as much as the grocery stores are that have all this room, you know, and are able to, you know, financially buy more.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Thank
Thanks.
You.
Thanks for coming forward. Do we have anyone else out there that would like to speak to the issue? Last call? Okay. Thank you. Then we are scheduled to take a vote on this issue next Wednesday, August 1st. Thank you. And we'll go on with Clarice. I think you are up.
Thanks for allowing me the opportunity to recognize Beverly Boudette. So recognizing Beverly for 25 years of service.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. Initially, I wasn't sure if it was 25 years of age or 25 years of service.
Yeah.
So Beverly had actually started with L&I, Lebanon Industries, and she's been in HR almost all the 25 years. She's worked for CTED, she's worked for in agriculture, she's worked for insurance commissioner. She started when it was usually called a personnel officer. And now she's held almost all positions, including HR director, HR manager position with OIC. So we are glad Bev made the decision to join LCB, so congratulations.
Thank you.
25 years.
That's great, Beth. Beverly, you certainly came to us at a difficult time. Uh-huh. And but would you like to say anything to us? To everybody here?
Thank you guys for having me here. It's a pleasure. It's been a year in office, so it's been challenging, but it's been exciting at the same time, so thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you for all the work you've done in this last year. It's
thank
been
you.
Incredible.
You guys color coordinated today, yeah?
Yeah.
Not
yeah.
the first
thing.
Time.
No, yeah, I know.
Excuse my
name.
Thank you.
Justin, I think you have something you want to talk to us about.
Madam Chair, members of the board, thank you for the opportunity to do some recognition here for Lieutenant Mike Waldron. I'd like to ask Mike to come on up here to be recognized. Mike has decided to move on and retire from the Liquor Control Board, and he comes to us today with 39 years of state service. 32 years of
for that.
When he mentioned 39, that was continuous service.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's over 40 years of service to the state.
Oh, wow.
So, been here a while.
Yeah, you have.
Uh-huh. So I wanted to take the opportunity to read a letter from the governor and then also talk a little bit about Mike's service with us. So I have to present to you today a letter from Governor Christine Gregoire, and it says, "Dear Michael, I am delighted to join with your family, friends, and colleagues in wishing you a happy retirement and to thank you for devoting more than 39 years to public service on behalf of the citizens of Washington. State employees provide the foundation that makes government work. Throughout your career, your professionalism and genuine desire to better the lives of others have been a tremendous asset to the Liquor Control Board. You have every right to look back on your many accomplishments with great satisfaction and pride. Your dedication to excellence only reinforces my belief that Washington State employees are among the finest to be found anywhere. I hope you know how deeply your efforts are appreciated. Again, Michael, please accept my warmest wishes for a happy and rewarding retirement. Sincerely, Chris."
Nice.
I'm totally shocked that she wasn't here to present this.
So, again, Mike has 32 years with the Enforcement Division of the Liquor Control Board. And as a respected Liquor Control Board enforcement employee, you've guided and influenced those around you. Professionalism, friendliness, and a genuine desire to better the lives of others have been the hallmarks of your distinguished career in law enforcement. Our staff at the WSLCB has benefited from your experience, and the agency will continue to benefit from numerous contributions for years to come. Your career and commitment to citizens of Washington has demonstrated the dedication of serving others, which is a cornerstone of state government. And I'd like to kind of deviate from my written response here to say that about 10 years ago, I got to know Mike a lot better when I moved to Spokane, and Mike has been in Spokane for a long time. And one of the things that's truly impressive about Mike's service with the Liquor Control Board is his interaction with licensees. And even to this day, you can walk in and licensees know him. He knows them by name, and the relationship and partnerships that he's built up over the years is truly admirable. And it's something that has set a benchmark for the board. Whether directly or indirectly, it's something that all the officers today can strive to make those types of relationships with the licensees. And that's something that was truly impressive with Mike. And over the last 10 years, he has had many changes and opportunities with the board. He's been a lieutenant in our retail enforcement. He's been a lieutenant for our tobacco tax unit. And he's also been a lieutenant for the non-retail unit. And now he's, through the 1183 reorganization that we've conducted, he has taken on the role again as a lieutenant in the retail enforcement. And in every change, he's provided valuable feedback on how the transition has worked. And what I've been very impressed with Mike over the last 2 years, especially with all the changes that have come his way without any choice of his own, is he's made the best of those situations, and he's volunteered to teach others what he knows in the specific areas that he's learned, and he's always been willing to offer suggestions to make improvements and to keep moving us forward in the right direction. And without a doubt, I've seen Mike do this more often than any other person who's been affected by those changes, and I'd like to thank you for that can-do attitude that you've demonstrated to those folks that that have been around you, because I think that's been real positive.
Thank you. Wow.
So, I'll continue that we are honored to have employees who place a great value in performing the work to the best of their abilities and a true concern for the citizens that they serve, and I think Mike has really demonstrated that over the years. Your commitment to consistent, high-quality work is commendable, and you've earned the right to look back on numerous professional accomplishments, as Chris has said, with satisfaction and pride. I hope that your wife Mickey and your family will enjoy your retirement life. And on behalf of the people at the Liquor Control Board, and especially our division, please accept my warmest wishes for a happy and rewarding retirement.
Thank you.
So I also have a plaque that we typically do, and this is kind of an honor for us to do this in front of the board, and a lot of times we present these at the regional meetings. But we've mounted Mike's badge on a plaque, and it says, "To Lieutenant Michael Waldron, in heartfelt appreciation for your dedication, expertise, devotion to service, and camaraderie to your fellow LCB employees, October 1979 to July 2012, presented on this day." So thank you very much, Mike. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Mike, will you talk to us?
No.
Even I know you well enough to know that that's not a true statement.
Madam Chair, members of the board, whenever I look at Sharon, I'll always bring this up to her for as long as I haven't known her a long time, but I will always remember this about her, and I will use a politically incorrect phrase when I do talk about her, but last year we had wine forums throughout the state, and there was one particular one down in Walla Walla where one of the people in the audience got a little testy. And anybody know who Judge Judy is? That's what I've called her ever since. She addressed that individual and set them down, and that person didn't say another thing. So I was very impressed, and I said to myself, "You go, girl." But, a little bit about the history of the Liquor Control Board that involves me personally. Back in the early 30s when they were trying to get the Steel Act passed, it was a hard one. My uncle was a representative and Speaker of the House. And because there were so much problems getting the Steel Act passed, he and a couple of his colleagues rewrote it. And kissed a lot of bootay and got it passed. So there was a Waldron at the beginning, and even though it's kind of close to the end, there's a Waldron at the end, so I'm kind of proud of that.
Oh, wow.
That.
That's cool. Good.
What I have always told people that I've talked to about the Liquor Control Board up until just the last couple of years, there wasn't one day that I did not get up and not want to come to work. The job has been fantastic. It was fun. I really enjoyed it a lot. Got to get out and meet a lot of people. We did well for a number of years on service to the licensees, and we were always going out meeting the licensees, but over the years that's gone down a little bit. I hope that goes back up. And Justin says, you know, the people still remember myself, and they still remember some of the other enforcement officers that preceded me. So it's a good public service job if you get out there and do it. And I've, like I said, I've had a blast and hate to leave, but there's another full-time job waiting for me for about the next year, taking care of a family estate, and then I plan on hitting the road and spending the winter months in the southern part of the United States and back home to Spokane for the summer.
That'd be great. How's the honeydew list?
Pardon?
Your honeydew list. Gonna catch up on that?
It's been there for, well, been married 35 years. We have made, when my, as a side note, my wife and I, when we were married back in June of 77, we made a pact. I would make all the major decisions, and she would make all the minor decisions. Do you know, to this date, in our family, there has never been one major decision. But I thank you. Thank everybody for coming today. Appreciate it muchly, and good luck to everybody else in the future.
Awesome. Oh, yeah. Thank you so much. Make it official.
Perfect.
Got it.
Thank you again, Mike.
We'd like to invite folks after the board meeting. We do have some cake and punch back here to celebrate.
Okay, great. Thank you, Justin. Thank you for that gesture. I will now see, ask our board members if they have any new business. Chris, for then?
No.
Old business? Anybody out there that wants to bring up something that you want us to talk about today? Okay. Thank you very much for attending. We are adjourned.